Article 1. Is God perfect? Point 1. Perfect does not seem a suitable term to apply to God, for etymologically it means thoroughly made. Now, since we would not say that God is made, we should not say that he is perfect. Point 2. Moreover, God is the first origin of things. But things have imperfect origins. Plants and animals, for example, begin from seed. God, therefore, is imperfect. Point 3. Moreover, as we have shown, the nature of God is simply to exist. Now, simply to exist is seemingly most imperfect, the lowest common denominator of all things. God, then, is not perfect. On the other hand, we read in Matthew, "Be ye perfect, as your heavenly Father is perfect." Reply. Aristotle tells us that certain ancient philosophers, the Pythagoreans, Pusippus, did not regard the first origin of things as the acme of goodness and perfection, the reason being that they only paid attention to the matter out of which things originated, and primordial matter is the most imperfect of all things. For matter as such is only potential, and primordial matter is therefore sheer potentiality and entirely imperfect. We, however, hold God to be not primordial matter, but the primary operative cause of things, and thus the most perfect of things. For just as matter as such is potential, so an acting thing as such is actual. Thus, the first origin of all activity will be the most actual, and therefore the most perfect of all things. For things are called perfect when they have achieved actuality, the perfect thing being that in which nothing required by the thing's particular mode of perfection fails to exist. Hence, reply to point 1. What is not made cannot properly be called perfect. But, as Gregory says, "Stammering, we echo the heights of God as best we can." And so, because things that are made are called perfect, when the potentiality of them has been actualized, we extend the word to refer to anything that is not lacking in actuality, whether made or not. Reply to point 2. The imperfect matter from which the things around us originate is not their ultimate origin, but is itself preceded by something perfect. For even when an animal is generated from seed, the original seed itself derives from some previous animal or plant. Anything potential must be preceded by something actual, since the already actual can actualize a thing which exists potentially. Reply to point 3. The most perfect thing of all is to exist, for everything else is potential compared to existence. Nothing achieves actuality except as it exists, and the act of existing is therefore the ultimate actuality of everything, and even of every form. So it is that things acquire existence, and not existence things. For in the very phrases, "the existence of women," or "of a horse," or "of some other thing," it is existence that is regarded as an acquisition, like a form, not the thing to which existence belongs. Article 2. Is God's perfection all-embracing, containing, so to say, the perfection of everything else? Point 1. God, it seems, does not contain the perfections of everything. For God, as we have seen, is simple, and the perfections of things are many and diverse. So God does not contain every perfection of things. Point 2. Moreover, opposites cannot exist together. Now, the perfections of things are opposed to one another, for each species is perfected by that which differentiates it from other species in the same genus, and such constitutive differences are opposed to one another. So it seems that, because opposites cannot exist together in the same thing, God does not contain all the perfections of things. Point 3. Moreover, a living thing is more perfect than a merely existent thing, and one that is wise more perfect than one that is merely alive. So that to live is more perfect than to be, and to be wise more perfect than to live. Now it is the nature of God simply to be. Perfections like life and wisdom, therefore, are not to be found in her. On the other hand, we have Dionysius saying that all existent things are contained in the primordial unity in God. Reply. The perfections of everything exist in God. For this reason, we call his perfection all-embracing. For, as Averroes says, he lacks no excellence of any sort. There are two ways of showing this. Firstly, because any perfection found in an effect must be found also in the cause of that effect. And this, either without modification, when cause and effect are of the same sort, thus woman begets woman, or in a more perfect manner, when cause and effect are not of the same sort. Thus, the sun's power produces things having a certain likeness to the sun. This is because effects obviously pre-exist potentially in their causes. Now, to pre-exist potentially in a cause is to pre-exist in a more perfect, not in a less perfect manner, even if to pre-exist potentially in matter is to pre-exist less perfectly. For although matter as such is imperfect, agents as such are perfect. Since God, then, is the primary operative cause of all things, the perfections of everything must pre-exist in her in a higher manner. And Dionysius is touching upon this argument when he refuses any description of God as this and not that, saying, God is everything, inasmuch as she is everything's cause. Secondly, because as we have seen, God is self-subsistent being itself, and therefore necessarily contains within herself the full perfection of being. For clearly a hot thing falls short of the full perfection of heat only because it does not fully partake of the nature of heat. To a self-subsistent heat, nothing of the virtue of heat could be lacking. Nothing, therefore, of the perfection of existing can be lacking to God, who is subsistent existence itself. Now, every perfection is a perfection of existing, for it is the manner in which a thing exists that determines the manner of its perfection. No perfection can therefore be lacking to God. And Dionysius is touching upon this argument when he says that God does not exist in any qualified way, but possesses primordially in herself all being, without qualification and without circumscription. And later he adds that God is the being of all that exists. Hence, reply to point one. If the sun, as Dionysius says, possesses in itself, primordially and without diversity, the diverse qualities and substances of the things we can sense, while yet maintaining the unity of its own being and the homogeneity of its light, how much more must everything pre-exist in unity of nature in the cause of all? Perfections, therefore, which are diverse and opposed in themselves, pre-exist as one in God, without detriment to his simpleness. Reply to point two. The previously mentioned answer solves this argument also. Reply to point three. In the same chapter, Dionysius tells us that, when considered as notionally separate, existence as such is more perfect than life as such, and life as such more perfect than wisdom as such. Nevertheless, living things, which both live and exist, are more perfect than things which merely exist. And one who is wise also exists and also lives. So, although being an existent thing does not involve being living or wise, for nothing partaking of existence need partake every mode of existence, nevertheless, existence itself does involve life and wisdom. For subsistent existence itself cannot lack any perfection of existence. Article 3. Can creatures be said to resemble God? Point 1. No creature, it seems, can resemble God. For the psalm says, "There is none like thee among the gods, O Lord." Now, the creatures to which we extend the word God are among the most excellent ones. So one has even less grounds for saying that other creatures resemble God. Point 2. Moreover, resemblance is a sort of comparison, so that things of diverse genera, which cannot be compared, cannot be alike. Thus, no one talks of a resemblance between sweetness and whiteness. Now, no creature can be of one genus with God, for God, as we say, does not belong to a genus. No creature, then, can resemble God. Point 3. Moreover, things are said to be alike when they agree in form. Now, nothing agrees with God in form, for nothing but God alone has as its nature simply to exist. No creature, then, can be like God. Point 4. Moreover, resemblance is mutual, for like is like to like. If then some creature were like to God, God would be like a creature, which Isaiah denies. To whom will you liken God? On the other hand, we read in Genesis, "Let us make women after our image and likeness." And in John's first epistle, "When she appears, we shall be like her." Reply. Resemblance results from sharing a common form, and there are as many sorts of resemblance as there are ways of sharing a form. Some things are called alike because they share a form of the same type to the same degree, and such we call not merely alike, but exactly alike. Thus, two equally white things are said to resemble one another in whiteness, and this is the best likeness. Other things are called alike because they share a form of the same type, though to different degrees. Thus, something less white is said to resemble something more white. This is a less perfect likeness. Thirdly, things are called alike because they share a form, though not of one type. An example would be an agent and its effect, when not in the same genus. For what a thing does reflects what its active self is. And since a thing is active in virtue of its form, its effect must bear a likeness to that form. If then agent and effect are of one species, their like forms will be of the same specific type, as when man begets man. If, however, the agent is outside the species, the forms will be alike, but not of the same specific type. Thus, a certain likeness exists between the sun and the things the sun produces, even though such things do not receive a form of like species to the sun's. If now there be an agent outside even genus, its effects will bear an even remoter resemblance to the agent. The likeness born will not now be of the same specific or generic type as the form of the agent, but will present the sort of analogy that holds between all things because they have existence in common. And this is how things receiving existence from God resemble her. For precisely as things possessing existence, they resemble the primary and universal sources of all existence. Hence, reply to point 1. As Dionysius says, when the scriptures state that nothing is like to God, they are not denying all likeness to her. For the same things are like and unlike God. Like, insofar as they imitate as best they can her whom it is not possible to imitate perfectly. Unlike, insofar as they fall short of their cause, not only in degree, as less white falls short of more white, but also because they do not share a common species or genus. Reply to point 2. Creatures are not related to God as to a thing of a different genus, but as to something outside of and prior to all genera. Reply to point 3. Creatures are said to resemble God, not by sharing a form of the same specific or generic type, but only analogically. Inasmuch as God exists by nature, and other things partake existence. Reply to point 4. Although we may admit in a way that creatures resemble God, we may in no way admit that God resembles creatures. For, as Dionysius points out, mutual likeness obtains between things of the same order, but not between cause and effect. Thus, we would call a portrait a likeness of a girl, but not vice versa. Similarly, we can say in a way that creatures resemble God, but not that God resembles creatures.